outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to LATalkRadio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
We all enjoy going on vacation, but you enjoy reminding everyone at the office every 10 minutes that your vacation is just weeks, then days, then hours, then minutes away.
Yes, we're counting down to.
Why do you, Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy, think the entire accounting department gives a flying rip about the precise time remaining before you leave for Cancun?
All-inclusive obnoxiousness.
We just pray you get sick.
Montezuma's revenge, yeah.
So the next time you're at a meeting and a guy says, I won't miss these meetings when I'm on vacation, give him a knowing nod, acknowledging that you can't wait for him to be gone either, because he's Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy, a real American hero.
Mr. Vacation Countdown Guy.
What does that loser do around here anyway?
Ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning, Kara. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Monday, June 7th. Back in the studio live after a weekend. Just a weekend.
It was just a weekend, huh?
Just a weekend.
Good morning, world. Sam said hello to me first. He loves me more than he loves the rest of the planet.
There you go, you see? That's why I'm with you alone in the same room.
He's like, hey, you're the only person I see right now. What'd so, you do?
What'd I do?
Yeah, over the weekend.
Oh, nothing, as usual.
Was it a good, you know, doing that. Nothing, though?
Yeah. Definitely good doing nothing.
I went to a birthday party. You know our guest Tanya that came on, the hot Russian chick with the filmmaking background and all those cool things.
Right.
And writes for LA Weekly. She had an amazing birthday. Shout out to Tanya. Shout out to Tanya. Hey, girl, your birthday was off the chain. But she had a field day birthday party.
Really?
Yeah, like where was old school. We actually did it at a park in off of La Brea. Near the Grove called Pan Pacifica Park. Mm-hmm. And we just hung out, played Ultimate Frisbee. It was fun. Outside,
yeah,
there was a dog. There was a dog.
That's a good
around.
Idea for a birthday, huh?
Dog running around. There was a couple cool kids.
On location.
Yeah, I think that's something I want to do next time for my birthday.
Yeah, that sounds good. When's your birthday?
Oh, it's not until November.
November, right?
Yeah, but I plan this shit out because I campaign for my birthday. I'm not one of these, don't get me anything. Well, I'm not big on presents, but I'm not one of these, we don't have to celebrate my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no.
No, you might as well celebrate it.
I think you should. I don't know. I don't know what's with all this weird, distorted humility. It's like people that are like, don't. It's like, well, no, it's your birthday.
Yeah.
I have a friend. He's like, I don't like anybody just because I just rather not even acknowledge my birthday because I don't like the attention. I don't like people going out of their way. There's something I think weird and odd about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get that you don't want to be a little hoggard.
Right.
And a little.
And you don't want to impose on people.
Yeah,
but at
I get that. Like you were like, don't bring gifts, and I took it literally. I didn't. But I mean, you still were. You're fine.
Yeah, I still had a birthday.
You had a birthday.
Party.
People had fun.
Yeah.
I sure did.
Yeah.
I had about three cranberry vodkas. There's like 10 for me.
Yeah, you had a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun. I was like, Goslar!
You had enough fun for four people.
Yeah, well, you know, somebody had to. You know, it was good. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But no, I'm one of these people. I like to live it up. I think it's fun. And anytime you have an excuse for a party, are you kidding me?
That's true. You need excuses for party. You don't need an excuse for party. You'll party
You're
anyway.
Right. I will.
Right?
I went out Saturday night. Okay, so Saturday day was Tanya's birthday. We had a great time. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of cute guys at her party, too, so it was really fun.
Ah.
Yeah. And then...
So it's fun if there's cute guys, right?
It's a bonus.
Why is that?
What do you mean, why is that?
Why is that?
It's just fun, you know, especially if it's new people. Well, they're people you don't know, and so you get to kind of meet new people and meet new guys and, you know, stuff like that.
Look at her, the glint in her eye. You must have met someone, huh?
No, I mean, I met like 5 new people. No, I just thought it was fun. It's just that energy is just fun. There wasn't any like hooking.
You like the tension and everything, the sexual tension with new guys, hot guys.
Well, yeah, but not just so much that. I mean, it's not always like a sexual tension. It's just fun. Sometimes there's an innocence to it. Do you know what I mean? It's not always like, yeah, 2010, going downtown. It's not like that.
No?
No, I mean, it could be, but that's not where it, I mean, there's just
That's
something.
Not your kind of a party.
No, it's just fun. It's like giddy. It's nervous. It's fun. It's, you know, sometimes it's just lighthearted. It's not always
So how many people were there, would you say?
I think that she had about, I would say about
30 people? 30 that's
people.
Cool, yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. There were some kids there. It was fun. I just, you know, we played fun games.
Right.
We stuffed a lot of marshmallows in our mouth, and we had a competition.
Oh, I saw that picture with your marshmallow. Now, is that a good picture?
No, it's not.
No, that's not a good picture
at
all.
But it's a game, though. Yeah. Everybody was doing it.
It shows Kira, like, stuffing her face with a marshmallow.
It's a comp... Well, hear me out. It's not like I'm having a binge.
You.
We had a competition where you had to...
Relax.
You were like, that was an ugly picture. Listen, it's a competition. It was a field day thing where you had to stuff marshmallows in your mouth, and after each one, you had to say chubby bunny.
Uh-huh.
So you put one, you're like chubby bunny. You put two, you're like chubby bunny. You put three, you're like chubby bunny. Four, chubby bunny. Five, ha 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 ha. And you have to be able to say it. I got to 7, which was pretty big, but somebody won, I think, at 9.
Oh, really?
It's hard, and you can't eat them. You can't, like, chew them.
Yeah, it just... Wow.
I started having gag reflexes.
I would after one. I can't stand the taste of marshmallows.
Oh, well, then there you go. You wouldn't have even lasted.
No.
But no, I got 7.
Really?
So she That's shows the good. Picture, I think, of just me, so it looks like I'm just
right.
eating a bunch.
Yeah.
But I'm not. It's a competition.
Okay, so
and
that's
I,
what it
yeah.
is.
So that's why it was. It was a lot of fun, though. It was a lot of fun. So then that night, we went to a really great place in Burbank called Burbank Bar and Grill, and there's an awesome group called Video Star. If you're in town, check them out. Saturday nights, they do a set, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and they change their costumes. And it's fun when you live in Hollywood and you kind of get out of the Hollywood scene and you go somewhere where a lot of these people, I think, are probably, you know, I don't know. They're just not they're not the Hollywood crowd. So it had a really full, vibrant feeling and everybody's dancing. A lot of different age groups are dancing. It's just a lot of life. It was a lot of fun.
Right.
And we went out there for my friend Kate's birthday. So it was a double party on Saturday.
Oh, I see.
And,
that's cool. Now, did you guys have a piñata at the park?
No, that would have been a good idea. Oh, my gosh, that would have been a great idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that my birthday, okay?
How can you have a party at the park without
Okay, remind me when November hits, because then I want to do
yeah,
mine like that.
You need one, huh?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So we went to go get our dance on. It was so much fun. And I'm there with one of my crazy, crazy friends, Brian. I mean, just crazy. When I say crazy, he's like me. He dances no matter what. He's having fun. He's talking to everybody. People think he's weird. He doesn't care. He's having a blast.
Mm-hmm.
He's always doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So we are having a blast, and we're just out there. We're buying a couple drinks, and we're dancing, and his pants split.
Like, really?
He is wearing these really cool pants, and they split. And so we're trying to hold his pants up. It was so funny. And we're dancing, and Brian just said, Carrie, he goes, we're so blessed. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, look how much fun we're having.
Mm-hmm.
I said, we are having tons of fun, aren't we, Brian? He goes, well, most people don't have this much fun. He goes, Carrie, I give a dollar in my bank account, and I'm going out on the town.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to figure out a way to go out and spend that buck and have a blast.
Well, there you go. It's about attitude, not about
the Oh, man, right? My gosh. We had so much fun. And then so we're walking down back to the car, and, you know, his pants are falling. So we took a picture where, you know, I tucked my skirt into my panties, and his pants were falling down. We took a picture. Maybe we'll post it. Stay tuned. A little ass shot.
You did what again? You tucked what?
I tucked my skirt into my panties.
Oh.
Yeah.
Where? The top or the bottom of it?
No, I like to the bottom of it. And then you can see my butt a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a picture next to Brian whose pants split.
Really? I'd love to see that picture.
We'll see. Maybe we'll post it. Who knows? Who knows? Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's what happens if you live in LA too long. You're like, so what? It's my panties. What? You know? You just don't care. I guess.
No, you don't care.
Yeah, I guess you should care. I know, I care about the different stuff. So, but we had a really good time, and then we, yeah, we rolled home, and it was a good time. And yesterday, I just did a lot of working on the computer. I just, too much working on the computer, though, makes you feel crazy.
Yeah.
It makes your back hurt. It makes your eyes burn.
You need to get out.
Yeah, so then I went, last night to see a friend, but I stopped by to try to catch a friend of mine, his comedy set, and I couldn't stay for the whole thing, and he didn't go on until later. But I kind of got snubbed. Have you ever been, you know that snubbed?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, hey, and they don't really say, hey, back.
Maybe he was too busy.
I gave him the benefit of the doubt. He was in a conversation with somebody. I gave him the benefit mm-hmm. of the doubt.
Yeah.
But then on the way leaving, I went up to say goodbye, and I said, hey, I thought you were going on. I'm sorry. I got to run. And he was a little awkward.
Mm.
I think he was talking to somebody important, and he didn't want to be, like, talking to another girl. I don't know. But it's just a awkward kind of snubbed feeling.
That sucks.
It is a weird feeling because you don't know how, you can't figure it out. You don't know why.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, I'm not coming on to you. I don't know where you're getting this vibe. Even if I was, you should be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But I don't think it was that. I think that there's a lot of insecurity mm-hmm. when you're out in the scene.
Probably.
Some people are like, oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get insecure or something. I don't know. It was weird.
Then ask him about it.
Oh, I probably
will. Is he a friend?
Nah, more of an acquaintance.
Okay.
He's more of an acquaintance, but I think we'll have to ask. In fact, you know what? He was on the show.
Really?
We should even call him. Hey, you're live on the air. Why the hell did you snub me last night? What the hell was that about? Whose ass were you kissing so bad that you couldn't, like, you know, unplug for a second and be grateful somebody came to see you?
So, I mean, were you put off by that?
Yeah, but I'm not. I mean, you can't even though you can't really take it personal because you don't really know why, mm-hmm. right? It's just an awkward feeling.
Yeah.
It's awkward. I'll probably ask.
Well, it doesn't matter why. I would have gotten pissed off and walked out.
No,
if someone didn't acknowledge
honestly,
me like that and I came to see them.
I think it was more of subtle. Mm-hmm. It was a subtle thing. It wasn't like blatant, but okay. I pick up on that stuff. I'll probably ask in passing, but at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. Because
not a big deal.
I mean, we're not like besties or anything.
I see.
It was just awkward. It was unexpected.
Mm.
I mean, because it's kind of rare to get snubbed, I think. Well, maybe not in this town, but
yeah.
I don't really get snubbed that often, but there's that weird feeling where it's almost the feeling of like you're waving hi to somebody
mm-hmm.
or they're waving hi to you and you think it's to you and then you look at to somebody behind you.
Yeah.
You know that feeling of like, oh, I feel like a total idiot. It's that feeling. Yeah. So it was that feeling.
Yeah.
But whatever. Life goes on. Life goes on, Sam.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So, Kara, we're going to have a couple guests today, unless your guest comes in as well.
Our guest.
And then we're going to have a whole party here.
We're going to have a party, man.
But we're going to have an author calling in. If you call it, you can call it an author. I mean, he created a book, but it's called Sex is Fun, Creative Ideas for Exciting Sex. And it's fully illustrated. It looks like a comic book. And it's probably like one of the nastiest books I've ever seen, you know?
Let me see it.
I mean, they talk about everything. And
you must have loved it. Did you read it going to the bathroom?
I did love it. No, I didn't read it going to the bathroom, but nevertheless, it's cool. And he mixes up a lot of different things there.
The girl's face looks like she's slow or retarded.
She's having fun. Oh, I gotta tell you, the other night, Saturday night, I'm about to go to bed. It was like 1:30,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to close the window, right? Because I close everything up to when we go to sleep. So I'm hearing this chick like moaning and stuff.
No.
And then before, you know, and I'm like fascinated by this. And
of
then
course, it makes
it
everybody.
It turns into screams. Well, not really screams, but yeah, maybe screams. And, you know, I'm like totally standing there and I'm feeling like I'm getting aroused, you know.
Of course.
But it like stayed with me the whole day, you know, because it's something you don't hear every day, you know.
My friend says that. He said, well, finish your story. So was she doing it?
I'm sure they were getting it on. That's what it sounded like, you know. But it's like ridiculous because it sounded like they didn't even have their window closed or anything.
I think L.A. is weird like that. I think people don't give a crap and I think they want you to hear them.
Really?
I have a neighbor. They moved out. Thank God. But I mean, she would go to town. I mean, she was loud. She sounded tired. She sounded worked out. It was not sexy sound. It wasn't sexy sex sounds. It was like, put me out of my misery.
Maybe that's the way she moans, you know?
I don't know, but I don't want to hear it. Because when you can hear someone else's moaning or their pillow talk,
mm-hmm.
I heard them like yell things to each other during sex. I'm like, I don't need to hear this. It's creepy. It's creepy.
It is creepy.
It's a creepy, weird feeling when she's like, thank you. And then she'll say something else, which I won't repeat.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
She says thank you.
She's like, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for stupid me. Now
but
go
anyway,
home.
My point is everybody's got their stuff, whatever. But it's private. It's a private thing between you and that person. It's creepy when you're brought into their experience.
It is, because you're not used to hearing that, you know?
Well,
and it's loud,
it's not
and it's
meant
quiet,
for it. It's
everybody's
not,
sleeping,
yeah.
You know? That was funny.
And it's just not meant for, you know, a third party. Anyway, so, but they ended up moving out, but I yelled out the window one day. I said, shut your window! It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really?
I'm like, I don't need to hear it, people. Uh-huh. I mean, shut your window! Well, then like the next day, I was taking a shower and my window in the bathroom was open and I sing, you know, really loud and there's a lot of resonance and echo.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been singing for about a good 30 minutes, getting my scrub on, cleaning my bits. Get my scrub on, woo 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 woo, singing and.
So you really sing in the shower, huh?
Yeah, I mean I'm a singer, and then it sounds even better in the shower. And I mean everybody sings in the shower, but. I was working it out, and I get out to towel dry, and I hear you shut your window, and I was like, touche.
Yeah.
Boom! I shut my window. I don't have a problem. I'll shut my window if you shut your window.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hear me sing, I have no problem. If that means you'll shut up or shut your window.
Yeah.
Or shut it down. I'm cool.
I didn't think people sang in showers anymore, but I guess they do.
Really? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Don't you?
No, I don't sing in the shower.
Oh, my gosh. Do it tomorrow, today, whenever you're
in the shower. I sing in the car, mainly.
The car, but sing in the shower because it has a nice echo.
Yeah, sure.
But a good friend of mine, he tells me, like, he had a neighbor that he would hear her, you know, getting aroused, turned on or whatever. You know, they're going to town.
Right.
And he said that he'd listen because it startles you and you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then you're like, you tell your roommate, oh my gosh, come listen. Because it's this intimate thing that you know you're not supposed to be a part of, that you're getting to eavesdrop.
Right.
And he said that he'd want to go over there and knock on her door and ask if she needed help with anything. He said he would get so turned on and he'd always be kind of looking out his window to see if she ever needed help with anything. He's like, okay, well.
Yeah. But so, I don't know. I was trying to analyze the progress by the moans, but it didn't seem like she was going anywhere. She was just like with the
Yeah.
So so that was my excitement this weekend. And you know what I wanted to bring up is, remember we had Roxana here the other day, right?
Yes.
And Roxana Shirazi, and she's an Iranian who ended up in England, and wrote a book, The Last Living Slut.
Just open that
so
book.
You went.
That's
so you
like
went,
straight up porn. Anyway,
yeah.
Go on. It's comic porn.
Yeah, she dropped it like it's hot.
I did. I don't know. If you're trying to be celibate, I don't need to see that stuff. It's too much.
Why?
Because it'll stimulate you. It'll give you thoughts and stuff.
Oh, God forbid.
God forbid
you'll be stimulated.
I don't want
God.
To right now. Anyway, continue. Back to Roxana.
So. You went to actually see her book signing, right?
Yeah, I really just got there right at the end just to say hi.
Yeah.
I didn't really stay. I didn't do the book signing part, but she looked great. She was really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, why?
So I friended her on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday I see that she wrote, stop Israeli brutality, boycott Israel, right? And
boycott Israel?
Right. And
why?
Because she's a Muslim. Why do you think? You know? But she didn't make her views known to us when she was here. So I wrote to her. I said, you should come back on the show and, you know, express your anti-Semitic sentiments.
What did she say?
Yeah, so she didn't say. A lot of other people responded there and stuff. And,
did you write that on her wall or did you?
Yeah, on her wall. Like as a response to
And what did
what
other people say?
Other people, this woman writes, she says, well, anti-Zionism is not the same as anti-Semitism. I told her they're both aimed at hating Jews, and that's the bottom line, you know. So, yeah, so, but there's like a whole discussion going on there, you
what
know.
What is, I mean, and I say this just as simple as it is, because I have not been reading the news, so my bad, but what is the Israeli brutality, supposedly?
Yeah, well, the Israelis stopped a couple of boats that were going to Gaza, you know, worrying that there are weapons on there and stuff. It was supposedly like a goodwill type of gesture and stuff, you know, but you still, there's a blockade there. And they have to get through the blockade, so they knew to expect military boats there.
Okay.
And so the Israelis stormed the boat, and they were attacked. They started getting attacked with with metal bars and pipes and shit like that, you know.
Oh, who was attacked?
So the Israeli commandos. Oh, okay. So they opened fire to defend themselves, you know. And so the whole world is like, the world waits for shit like this, you know.
Okay.
It's like, because this anti-Semitism is always right under the surface, you know, always looking for a reason to flare up again.
Uh-huh.
And that's all you need, you see, and that's why these people do this.
Uh-huh.
You know, they do it because they know how Israel is going to react, and then it's going to ruin its image in the world, you know. But the bottom line is, Israel realized a long time ago that if you listen to the rest of the world, then you're going to be destroyed, you know, because the rest of the world hates you. So, you know, you just,
Oh, wow.
I mean,
that's a loaded conversation. Yeah, I'd love to have her back on the show.
Yeah, I don't think she'll come, though, but I hope she will. She's on a book tour now. I don't know when she's back in town. But we'll have her call in maybe sometime.
I mean, there's no judgment. Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of.
I mean, I like people to hang themselves with their anti-Semitic remarks. I love that.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I like to hear both sides, and I think that we have a pretty safe forum for people to do that. I mean, I grill people, but.
Yeah, we can do both sides, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to hear
so
what they're saying.
So if there's an anti-Semite out there, you know, you're invited to call in or come on the show.
Well, I mean, what's the? I mean, you've got to understand though, Sam, and I'm sure you do. Like, certain if it really is anti-Semitic. If it's anti-Semitic, if people have that, that's a prejudice. That's a hate.
Right.
You can't argue, negotiate it, or debate it.
Obviously.
You can't, because it's not logical.
That's why don't even try.
But if it's somebody that's saying, well, there's an anti-Zion, or if somebody's saying that there's, and I'm not defending him, I'm just saying if they've got a perspective that they don't agree with the government or the way things are going down, and it's not because they hate Jews, well, you can at least argue that and hear them out.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't invite people on the show that just have a hatred. It's stupid, because you can't negotiate or argue or debate it. So
No.
Yeah,
they already made up their minds.
Well, yeah, and it's not even rooted in logic. It's
exactly.
Just
that's what anti-Semitism is all about. If you ask people, why do you hate Jews, they don't know. They just do, you know? And that's why I posted. I said, you know, I think anti-Semitism is in the DNA of humanity. I think everybody has it, and it just waits to come out to the surface, you know?
Well, I got to be honest. I think it's a little narcissistic. I think that hatred is in good and evil runs down the heart.
Yeah, but I'll show you the difference between this hatred and other hatred if you want.
No, I mean, there's people that hate blacks. There's people that hate whites. There's people
but that
hate...
that's racism. You know, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking deeper than that.
What's deeper than that? How is anti-Semitism... I can't say the word.
Semitism.
Help me out with it. Break it down.
Okay. You know what? Let's leave it for another time to talk about, because, it's like a long discussion,
And
a heavy discussion, and I want to be prepared for something like this. And actually, I want to talk to someone who's going to challenge me, you know?
Yeah.
And
he's like, you're not going to do that, so it's not. Well, I mean, I really want to learn. I want to hear what you have to say about it. So let's do it another time. I want to hear.
But it's hatred that's lasted centuries. I mean, no hatred has lasted that long.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. And what about the blood libels? You know,
did you know that
there's still a blood libel? Okay. What that means is, over the centuries and still to this day, they teach Muslims and that the Jews take Christian kids' blood and Muslim kids' blood and make matzah with it, right? For Passover. So this is one classic that's been around for centuries. For millennia, and it's still here.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, people are still taught that. You go to an Arabic country and see, you know. So, also take, for example, we had hatred with Germany, with Japan during World War II, with the Italians. Where's that hatred now? It's gone. It's gone. There's no hatred. We're like best friends with these countries.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't happen in anti-Semitism. It's like a hatred that cannot be explained. There's no like grounds to it. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
It's not like the Jews are a threat to anybody else. Do you know what a small percentage Jews are? It's like 0.2% of the world population, maybe.
Yeah.
Not even that.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about? 15 million people? That's not a lot of people.
Well, I see what you're saying. There's a history of it that goes further,
ancient.
Yeah, you're saying it's ancient. Okay, I see what you're saying. But like, I'm not anti-Semitic. I don't think.
No, you're not. But you know, given the right circumstances, you could be turned easily.
Well, I think anybody could be turned into many things. Is what I'm saying. Like, not to minimize what you're saying, I think that.
You see, it's easy to do.
How?
It's easy to hate Jews because everybody else does. So you sort of like feel you belong. Now, look, I'm not making obviously blanket statements, but I'm saying this is what I'm seeing, okay? There's mm-hmm. always individuals that are not like that. There's a lot of people that love Israel, support it, and, you know, and thanks to these people, mm-hmm. Israel still exists.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's people that just give them the right, just go on Facebook and see what people have said. Just go and said, yeah, see what people, how people reacted, you know, boycott Israel this and screw this and screw that, you know, and that's the thing. And Israel realized a long time ago that if you pay attention to what the world says, we're not going to exist, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to do what you got to do because you have no friends mm-hmm. out there. Israel has no friends out there, so-called friends.
Well, I don't agree. I mean, I do see what you're saying. I mean, it's a slippery slope, and there's so many different powers that may be. Like, for example, I think the U.S. has been a huge ally.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, currently
but name anybody else.
And even
the U.S. sometimes turns on Israel.
Well, the current administration is kind of a little jacked up. So
yeah,
It's shifty. I don't know, but I mean, I think you could look at... I definitely see what you're saying as far as the length that it's gone, and the you said ancient. It's been... Mm-hmm. It's like... It has more time than other prejudice but nonetheless, I still think it's, you know, this it's the same thing, although it's got maybe a deeper root because it goes mm-hmm. further back to like going to the South. I mean, I go back home and I'm just like, really, we still have a problem with black people and white people getting married?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And even though it's not as maybe the same length, I still think it's the same thing where it's this completely
but
irrational.
This thing is not really sanctioned by anybody. You know what I'm saying?
What
I mean,
you
don't have a government that backs these views. You know, you don't have, you know, we all know that it's wrong, but in many countries, it's not wrong to hate Israel.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a difference. There's a different power to it. There's more of a different, like you're saying, there's a different power.
Yeah, I mean, and there's no grounds. I mean, you know, for crying out loud, what have the Jews really done to the world when you think about it? There's no forced conversions. There's no, you know, there's no imposing of anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no... you know, there's never been any genocides, you know, any of this stuff that you'd see with other people that you'd hate.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I'm saying it's unexplainable.
It's just
but,
madness.
But I got to tell you that it's anti-Semitism that makes me believe in the Bible and in God, because it does say in the Bible for the Jews that these things are going to happen.
Mm.
And they happen. Mm-hmm. They happen. I mean, if we haven't learned anything from the Holocaust, we're never going to learn.
Mm.
You know, and the fact that 6 million people were allowed to die shows you how many people felt that same sentiment. It's like, okay, Jewish blood is cheap, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just Germany. It was Europe. It was France, you know? I mean, even the French, you know, turned out to be motherfuckers during World War II. So...
It's just when you cuss, it makes me laugh. It's just so not your character to me. Oh, Sam, my heart goes out to you.
Aww. It does, huh?
It does, because I mean, as much as I can, I feel your...
Yeah, you know, and like you said, it's not just me, obviously, but someone's got to speak up about this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's why, I talk to my dad and stuff on the phone, and he tells me what's going on there in Israel, and, you know, it's just like it's, you know, there's no friends. There's no friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you feel like in a way the U.S. is kind of getting to that place? Because I feel like the U.S. has been so villainized in the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
And for some of it I understand, but there's a lot of it that I think it's just become chic.
Yeah, but still, look how many people come to this country.
Yeah, well, that's, you know? I mean, a lot of people, I mean, that's because of, yeah, that's absolutely
Everybody
true.
Everybody wants to come here.
But they want to come and they want to take. I mean, I have so many, I mean, I'll say this and I've said it to their face. There's people that love to come here, trash our country, and make money off of us.
Yeah.
You know, get out, go away. Yeah. Like, and I don't mean it because they're my roommates. No, but I mean, it's like the fact that you can even be in this country and say that you don't like it and then still make money off our country.
Right.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
So go back and sit and drink your latte and enjoy the freedom that you didn't have to work for and you didn't have to earn. And I feel like there's just a real lack of gratitude. I mean, specifically.
There is. It's easy to trash America, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and anyway, are we getting
Here we go. Our guest, I think, is calling. Good morning. This is Sam and Kara, and you're on the air. Is this our guest?
Yeah, this is Kara Kipper.
Yeah, Kipper, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing just great. How are you two doing?
We're doing well. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling you from Minneapolis.
Oh, Minneapolis, Minnesota. There
you
go. Oh,
there, Minnesota. You guys have a lot of sex in Minnesota.
Yeah, you guys actually talk about sex up there?
Oh, you know, you betcha. It's a pretty heavy Protestant Norwegian influence up here, and we need something to do during the winter.
Right.
It is a good winter activity. They should play the Olympic sports.
Yeah. And yeah. It beats off the cabin fever.
Yeah. You know? There you go. And I guess that's why your book is so useful, because I guess it could keep you busy for a long time, all the stuff you write about. And so you wrote a book called Sex is Fun, and you call it the first fully illustrated, interactive, titillating sex manual, combining the innovative look of a graphic novel with nonfiction advice. Now, that's a mouthful, but if you look at the book, it's very simple. It looks like a comic book, and obviously a lot more pages than a comic book. And you take on a lot of different things when it comes to sex, like how to have better sex, different games, different so forth. How did this book come about, Kipper?
Out of pure necessity. No other book really had the graphic detail necessary to explain how to have really awesome creative sex for your whole life. They're vague, you know.
Right.
Like if you look at a sex manual, they're often, you know, a couple looking really happily at each other in like a soft focus.
Right.
Lying in a way where you didn't even see genitals contacting each other. And they were also just vague in their descriptions. It would be like, talk to your partner. But it didn't really, you know, about a very difficult topic for a lot of people to talk about. It didn't really explain how to get into the nitty-gritty of it. And I wanted to do that, which is why I added interactive workbook pages so that couples would be kind of forced to, you know, talk about the stuff that was so hard to talk about.
Right.
I also thought that all the books out there were vague in their descriptions of ideas, like scenarios that couples could do together. Like a lot of the books would say, dress up like a naughty maid and serve him.
Right,
and
right.
That was it.
Yeah.
And so I decided to just spell that one out completely. What's yeah. Where,
so you wrote, wrote your own little screenplay for him.
Yeah. Well, that, and like, that chapter in particular is fun because you get to play hard to get, which is fun for a lot of people. And it shows you exactly how to do it,
right.
Which I really like.
And you don't really, you don't pretend to talk about making love. You're talking about raw sex, and there's a lot of explicit, almost every frame in the book is explicit. And you know what's interesting, though, is I like that you made it apply to every sexual orientation. I mean, he's got, like, positions of gay men in there and lesbians and so forth. So, You've really considered everybody there. Now, were you a little uncomfortable writing about homosexuality and things like that?
No. I was worried that doing so would limit the book. Because,
right.
You know, the excuses are that gay men won't buy a book if it has vulva in it, for right. instance. Right?
Yeah.
And lesbians won't buy a book if it has a flesh and blood penis in it.
Right.
And straight people won't buy a book if it's got men getting on men in it. They're fine with girls on girls. They'd love that. Give it, you know, sell them as much of that as you can sell them. But, like, there are these imagined limitations to a property that cannot have these if you want to sell to these.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't believe that is true any longer. I think that there's a new generation of sex-positive people that are not vulvaphobic, are not suffering from penis envy, and straight people that aren't so homophobic.
Did you just say vulvaphobic?
Vulvaphobic. I like that.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
I'm going to use
I
that.
I believe that we're evolving beyond that way of thinking. That, like, look, you can turn to a page and be like, huh, okay, those are two people that aren't me and my partner. I can still understand how that would be fun to try. And then flip the page and go, oh, there I am. I think we can all get along with that now.
Yeah. Yeah,
I could be wrong. I guess we'll find out with sales of the book, but I think it's time.
What are you married? Are you in a relationship? And how did you? I mean, like, I know you kind of said it was just pure necessity, but I guess my question is, I mean, this is a lot of work. I mean, this is a dense book. I mean,
yeah.
you either had a lot of time on your hands, or
I'm a married guy. All right, married to a Catholic, wonderful Catholic woman.
Uh huh.
And I think that the Catholic may be the key in the necessity part of my Zen.
Yeah.
You know,
go
ahead. Let me just make a sweeping generalization. Okay, Catholic girls often have trouble talking about sex. They love sex. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
But they have trouble talking about it and expressing themselves sometimes. And they're completely unaware of the sex negative images, messages they may have received growing up.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
So, like, that was a challenge in my relationship because I really, you know, I'm into sex.
Right.
So, I'm really into it. And I really want to be there for my partner. And I want to spend a whole life having, like, really fantastic, awesome, creative, exciting sex.
Right.
That blows me away and surprises me for the rest of my life, you know. So that means you got to really put some work into it.
Yeah.
You know, in a marriage, I don't know if you guys are where you are, but you know, so you know, after so many years, you know, like you got to put your back into it, or you know.
Yeah, it gets stale after a while. Yeah, there you go. And the nice thing about it, I mean, this is not really like pornography or anything, because you're talking about talking dirty and writing a sexy letter, making sexy movies, fun with blindfolds, giving massages, role playing. And I think these are all things that people do and to spice up their sex life.
Yeah. I think that actually all the activities in it are pretty common
Right. Fantasies
that people have. And I don't see any reason why people shouldn't explore those. If you have these fantasies,
Right. Explore
them. I don't think any harm will come to you because you're exploring these fantasies at all.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have a much more satisfying life, hope, no matter what your relationship is. I mean, even, you know, I don't know if you're poly or monogamous or, you know, swinging or, you know, what your deal is, but like these are fun and they're good fantasies and they're really common. I mean, I'll be honest, they're just the really common ones.
Right.
That you do a search engine on any of these fantasies, and you're going to find a lot of websites dedicated to that fantasy.
Right.
So what would you say your real point of difference is with the book, if you're saying a lot of the examples are very common?
But I think that the difference is that we did not choose prudishness as a, like, we didn't... A lot of the books, they think that what they're doing is in good taste, but what they're really doing is making all the readers scratch their heads and go, how do you get there?
Mm,
you know?
Yeah.
And we just said, let's show them exactly what we're talking about. And the drawings free us,
Right. Because
these graphic illustrations, they free us from photos. You can't really pull it off in the same detail,
well,
you know, that we can with drawings.
Let me ask you, not to interrupt. So, I mean, you're a man. I mean, did you get woman input on this, or was this just like...
Oh, yes.
I'm a dude.
Laura Rad is a fantastic sex educator, mm-hmm. who's traveled as far as Stockholm, Sweden to, you know, teach people about dildos. And she works with me on the show, my podcast, Sex is Fun. Mm-hmm. And I would not have been as great of a book without her helping me, advising me, and helping me make it as sex positive as possible.
Right.
She was a big help, definitely.
Yeah. Now, where did you find this illustrator? Is that someone you knew before, or did you meet especially for the book? How did that happen? Because, I mean, that's some great drawings there.
Oh, thank you. I've been working with lots of illustrators ever since Sex is Fun began, and I've worked with illustrators in other projects. I've worked in television programming for children, animation. So I've been working with art and artists for a long time, and I've been kind of auditioning someone to do this book for a long time by doing the art for Sex is Fun, their games, the Great Sex Game series, and for the magazine and for the podcast. And he was one of the artists that I used, and I liked his style the most. He's also very efficient. He's very quick with the pen. So Josh Lynch was the obvious choice for me.
I see. Okay. And the way you did it is you wrote it, and then he made the illustrations based on that, or was it the other way around?
Well, what happened was I already had a book written as a book.
Right.
And when I started converting it to graphic novel format, I noticed that, you know, 8 pages would turn into 1 page of art.
Right.
So it, like, the book got condensed. I was able to do a lot more with fewer dead trees. And so what I would do is I would write my copy that needed to be, you know, here's the description, or the what the reader reads. And then I would write what the reader sees in terms of a drawing.
Right.
And I would give those to him, and he would just create, you know, what I want. I'd kind of art direct that so that I knew what I wanted to look like.
Right.
And then he would just create around it. And then, you know, there was some collaboration back and forth where he would let me know, I think it would be better if we had the woman like this because it would fit the page better, you know, or whatever.
Right.
And because he comes from comic books, that's like his passion.
Right.
He knew how to really make the style look appealing.
Right.
And I really like that about it.
Yeah, and it's very inviting. I mean, if you're into comics or you don't want to really read a lot but really see the illustrations, and you know, and it's funny too, you know, and I think that's that helps quite a bit. And you gotta, you know, you take this book lightly. It's, you know, it's not like like I think a marriage manual. I don't think you're pretending to write one, but rather than a fun book, you know, I think, and you can probably learn a thing or two from it, you know. So
you have some really funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny stuff there.
Well, there's some funny, like he's got a guy wearing a Gold's Gym shirt, and, like he's kind of giving these people characters, like Gold's Gym guy with muscles.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, obviously you took the time there. It's not just illustrations, but I think there's a certain cohesiveness to the book there. And well, the book is Sex is Fun, and we're talking to Kid or Caper from Minneapolis. And just as a side note here, it says that you're a sex game designer.
Yeah, I've been designing and writing sex games for GreatSexGames.com since 2003,
mm-hmm.
And there's a whole series of my games available at GreatSexGames.com. Mm-hmm. There's a game for couples called Sex is Fun out there. There's party games that range from non-touching, you know, just like talking about sex. Like there's a scruples game called Dick and Virginia,
mm-hmm.
where you kind of figure out, you know, how people would solve relationship problems. And then there's games that span from, you know, truth and dare style all the way up to full-on swinging games. And they sell well, and they're fun, and I enjoy working with that company. They're good.
Well, sounds good. Okay, so you can find Kidder's Games at GreatSexGames.com, and your website is SexIsFun.net, is that correct?
Yeah, SexIsFun.net. Check out that magazine. Lots of new art there, and articles all about sex.
Sounds good.
And soon we'll have a teen, a help site for teens as well.
Oh, okay.
At that site when it breaks off between adult versus teens. And I'm hoping to have some really good comic books available for...
You're going to sex educate kids on positions? Is that what you're saying?
No, we're going to educate them on how to make the right choices and how to, you know, not get into trouble. That's my goal there, is that I don't feel like there's a lot of really fantastic sex education for younger people.
Right.
Or parents of younger people, more importantly, where, you know, it's sometimes I think that parents have a lot of good advice sometimes. There's some very sex positive parents out there doing, you know, a very good job with the kids. But there's also, it's a very sex negative culture that we're living in. And this idea that, you know, we're going to raise our kids with this concept of you're going to be abstinent pretty much forever or until you're married, and I'm not going to give you any information you know, outside of that, so just don't choose sex, is kind of ridiculous. Things how 96% of us have premarital sex, and I find it so odd that we forget so quickly what it was like to be teenagers, mm-hmm. and how, you know, the choice, you know, to be 17 and in love and being told abstinence is your only choice is a very difficult thing to be straddled with. So I think it's really important that they know what they're, you know, how to be safe, whether they choose abstinence or they don't choose to be abstinent. I think it's really important that people have the information so that they can keep themselves safe.
Sounds
good. It's ridiculous that we don't.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I have to agree. Kira doesn't agree, but that's okay.
No, that's not I don't agree. I don't believe in living in the dark ages. I don't think he should. I think he's right as far as, you know, you need to educate kids on sex from every angle. And I think that I agree with that. It's about really, and then letting them make a choice. I mean, because ultimately you can't decide what your kids are going to do. I mean, let's be honest, right?
Unless you have, like, an unhealthy amount of control over your kids where you can be with them all the time.
Yeah, you're not
going
to...
Yeah, you cannot make this decision for them. They're going to make it.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I also look at it from stepping further back. I mean, I don't know what culture you live in. I know in L.A., it's a completely probably different culture than Minneapolis or Minnesota or wherever. It's just... There is such an exploitation of sex that it's not about liberation. I think it's about really tearing the fabric of people. And I can't get down with that. I think it's one thing to educate and empower people to know what their options are. It's another thing to kind of, you know, promote and say just because you have feelings, you should do it. And, you know, they even show, you know, sex is a total body experience.
I completely agree with you. I think that a large amount of education has to be on the opportunity to be abstinent. I think that that's a big deal. I think that more education needs to go into, look, how do you know if a partner's treating you well? Because when you said exploitation, yes, that happens. That happens, you know, from peers, from boyfriends, from girlfriends who want something from you. Well, how do you, you know, like, no one really talks to kids about, like, is what they want for, is that something you want to even give them? Or are they just kind of tricking you into this? Or are they treating you with the way you deserve to be treated? There's a lot of people out there, young people, who are still wearing scars from junior high because kids are mean, you know?
Yeah.
And that wounds them in a way that can really be a part of making bad decisions. And I think we need to talk about that very directly. With young people, I don't think that we do. I think that we need to be honest about it and not lie. You know, when you lie to kids, even when you think it's in their best, you know, for it's something that's a lie, but you know, the ends justify the means. They figure it out, and then they don't trust you anymore.
Well, I really can't. I mean, the thing, what I'm seeing culturally with it is that, you know, this isn't, you know, 1970 or 1980 or 1990. I mean, this is 2010. So there's still a lot of repression. There's still a lot of conversations that need to be had. I completely agree with you. I'm not an advocate for being in the dark. So let's get that clear before I say what I'm about to say. However, there, I mean, it's, if studies show, you talk to gynecologists, you talk to doctors, more and more kids are sexually active at a younger and younger and younger age. And is that really from repression? Because I don't think so. I think it's really coming from an exploitation of sex and teaching kids that because they feel it, they should be able to have it. And sex is a total body experience. It's not just physical. It's emotional, mental, spiritual. It even changes people's brain patterns. They've talked about the neurological effects that sex has on anyone and how it has to do with bonding. It can impair their ability to bond. So to be honest, I really feel that, you know, what's missing is really approaching it from a total body study and educating kids on it on many different levels. And I really think that there's just a real tear of our fabric. And I think that I live in L.A., so it's a different conversation on this end. I think maybe if I lived in a small town, which I grew up in a small town, but I've lived currently in my adult life or whatever in a smaller town where, you know, you see maybe more of that repression, I think I'd be more apt to, you know.
Oh, I assure you that in my city, in your city, young people are having sex.
No, that's my point, absolutely.
So really, we're all very similar. And all across America, teenagers are having sex, or younger than teenagers are having sex. And I think that the ones that are doing it, making bad decisions, are doing that because no one's talking about it. And I think we need to open that conversation and be completely honest and treat sex no differently than teaching people about safely crossing streets. And, you know, and I don't think the genitals should be talked about any differently than elbows. I think it should be so commonplace, and I think that the guilt factor is a lot of the reason that people get hurt because of sex.
I would agree. I would totally agree. I would agree with on that. I also think, though, trying to make it commonplace is trying to make it casual and trying to kind of make it this, you know, I think people should have the freedom to talk about it, and I respect that, but I also think there's something about desecrating where people make it this, the elbow isn't the genitals. It's not the same thing, and it doesn't have the same effect, and guess what? The side effects are different. Have the conversation. Stimulate the conversation. I think that's awesome, and I'm with you on that, but I also think, you know, you've got all these shows. I live in LA. I see the media. I see what's pumped out. I mean, they say DC makes the laws, LA makes the culture. And you look at shows like Gossip Girl, you look at all these shows where kids are learning their sex education from. And it's like we're taking 40-year-old issues, We're putting them on hot teenagers that are 14, 15 years old, and we're having shows, and we're basically, you know, idolizing youth, and we're teaching them that, you know, they have this right to just go and run crazy sexually. And I think that, I think there needs to be a lot of different conversations had, not just the mechanics. I think there needs to be some, you know, really emotionally and spiritually driven conversations.
Okay, but he's allowed to focus on the mechanics, I think, and there's nothing
wrong with
that.
He can do whatever
he
wants,
exactly.
And I can actually oppose. Okay. I can actually bring up a different side. I'm not even opposing him. I'm saying I'm bringing up a different side. So relax. We're on the same page.
Okay, Kiddo Caper, the book is Sex is Fun. And wait a minute. Sex is Fun, Creative Ideas for Exciting Sex. Kiddo, thank you so much. The book just came out, I understand, June 1st, right?
Yeah, June 1st.
Well, congratulations.
It's the number one best-selling Amazon sex therapy book in a day.
Really?
Not bad.
Wow. Not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations to you. All the best. How long did it take for you to put this together?
I think I've been writing the book for about 12 years. From beginning of art, it was 14 months.
Wow. That's a long time. Well, so you finally get to see your baby and show it to the world. So there you go. And I, for one, am enjoying the book. And everybody go out and get it. The website, again, is sexisfun.net. Kidder, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for coming on.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
No pun
intended. So much.
And all
you
the
and I should talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
What did he say?
You and him should talk soon, I think.
Oh, I guess. Call me Cater. Find me on my emails on Facebook. Where is it on? It's on the...
On the website.
It's on the website. No, I'm not opposing him. I'm bringing a different side to it, Sam.
Yeah.
And it's a loaded conversation.
You can tell that to somebody who doesn't know you, but I happen to know you. And
I do.
I mean, it's like every time the word or the concept of sex comes up, I see like a wall.
I don't
coming
like
up with
listen,
you.
I don't agree.
But I think you're extremely repressed. That's what I think.
You wouldn't even know that. You don't even have that.
Have to know your past. I can see.
No, but you've never had sex with me. You don't know what I'm like dating. No, you don't know me intimately.
It doesn't matter what I know is your views.
Listen, we have fundamental differences in our beliefs.
Right.
But I'm actually very open to hearing what people have to say. I'm not even opposing what he's saying. I'm bringing up different sides.
But I'm not talking about opposing. I'm just saying that the moment sex comes up,
we're not on the same page.
A wall.
Get with the picture, Sam.
Okay.
You and I are not on the same page.
I understand, but you don't see the wall coming up there?
Because why? We're not on the same page. I believe in a different context.
Right.
That's it.
Uh-huh.
It's not because I hate sex. I don't want to talk about it. But yeah, I don't think it's this thing that you know, we should exploit. And I'm not saying he's saying that. I think he's actually got some really great points.
But who says we have to exploit it? Talking about it
I'm
is exploiting it?
I'm not talking about that. I'm saying I took it to a different scale.
Right.
I took it to...
I'm surprised you didn't switch into your God talk, because that's usually your MO. But
No, I mean, we're not all going to believe the same way. I mean, just like you're saying, I guess I see a wall. Respect that I believe differently, just like I respect you.
No, I respect it, but it can also observe that I think that's what's happening.
I believe differently, and I get that you do, and I accept that.
Okay,
I'm not
good. I'm accepting you the way you are.
What I see as being liberated, I don't know, is what you call liberation, or maybe not know what you call, but maybe society calls sexual liberation. I sometimes see it as bondage.
Mm-hmm.
I can't always get down on this, woohoo, sexual liberation, because I think a lot of it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he's saying, I mean, he's not really taking any specific side. He's just wanting to talk about it. He's wanting to educate people and empower people.
Right.
I mean, and I took it and brought it into a different context. But yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem with what the guy's saying.
Okay.
But
I think you're afraid of sex. That's what I think.
Well, you would have absolutely no intimate knowledge of that. So.
No, I don't. I don't.
And to be honest, I mean, a lot of people I won't go there. I won't even go there.
All right, let's take
a
break.
I won't go there. I
gotta go. Okay, we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com. Thank you. You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
In a world where shitty talk radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Kara, we're back. And we have our guests in the studio. We have two guests here, and we have Tucker and Gabe.
And, awesome people.
Awesome people. How long have you known each
other? I think I met Gabe maybe a year ago.
You're not talking into the mic.
We met at Los Feliz Coffee Bean.
Get a little closer to the mic, Gabe, so we can hear you.
We met a little while back, and Gabe does comedy, I do comedy, and we hung out a couple times, and we ran into each other, and then Gabe's fun, he's cool. What do you get, a latte? I don't know.
I actually go for the iced coffee there. It's a good...
It's nice and refreshing.
It's delicious. But
I ran into Gabe several times, and then he was just sharing with me this really funny app, which I'll let you go into.
Yep.
And I said, come on the show and tell us about it. And I think it's not your cup of tea, because I know you, Sam.
Why?
Because you don't like to talk about this stuff, but I love it. So you guys go into it.
What is it? An app about God? Is that what it is?
No, not about God. Okay. You love
close,
God.
Though. Close. Yeah.
It is. Is it close?
It's very close. It's fart battles.
Oh, fart battles! That's right. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
That sounds good.
You do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Tucker, are you part of that too?
Yeah, actually. So it was my idea, I guess, about 6 months ago, a year ago, but somewhere in between there, and I helped put together the team and
his idea I immediately approved.
Yeah. And Gabe helped me with a lot of the content, and he's helping with the marketing effort, and so.
Are you guys?
We just launched it like 2 days ago.
Cool.
Yeah. Really?
So this is actually
brand
great
new. First time for them to talk about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you guys are friends? I mean, have you known each other for a while?
Yeah, a long time.
Since college,
really?
Actually.
College, yeah. We met
really?
In college.
Where'd you guys go to college?
We went to Penn, University of Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
No, it was
Is that where you're both from or just for school?
Well, no, I'm from New York City originally.
Are you?
I'm from Texas. So.
Oh, really? Yeehaw, so am I. What part?
Austin and Houston.
Okay, I'm from Houston. HTX.
That's right,
HTX.
I knew that.
Shit, you know. So that's cool. Yeah, we got that bond. I mean, Texans are proud.
Yeah.
I mean, we may not know why, but they are proud. Yeah. Proud state.
I was in Texas for the first time recently for South by Southwest.
Oh,
we went there.
But did you love it?
You know, I liked it. I was in Austin, but I was very impressed with the Houston airport.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
George Bush.
George Bush. Yeah. They had the color-coded terror alerts every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Well,
so,
you know.
So, Tucker, you came up with the idea pretty much for the fart wars?
Fart battles.
Fart
correct.
Battles. I'm
fart
sorry.
Battles, yeah.
Yeah, might as well get it right. Right?
Yeah, it's...
So, tell us how you came up with the idea.
Sure. So, you know, I was working for an interactive agency here in L.A. called Animax at the time, and... The company did a lot of things in the entertainment world where, you know, I guess, so mobile media and web stuff kind of comes together with entertainment. So, I was keeping...
What did you do there at the company?
I was the lead strategist, so, you know, a lot of business development stuff and
kind of saying,
here's the cool new idea, this is what we should be doing.
Uh-huh.
So I was looking at, you know, the iPhone market as it was starting to go crazy in, like, 2009, and I saw that there was... I mean, specifically, there's this app called iFart, which most people have heard of, and it's really just there's like a million of these, actually like 700 fart apps in the app store.
Really?
So I looked at it and I was like,
gosh.
Wow, it's crazy how many apps there are, and when you look at them, they're really just like you press a button and it makes a fart sound.
Yeah.
And it's like.
Yeah,
I'm
surprised Apple actually accepts those, huh? Because they have some strict rules, I think. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think they recently. They recently did some things to get rid of, like, porno type
sexual
apps,
stuff,
you know.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I mean, farts are the kind of thing that pretty much everybody, it's not, like, really that dirty, you know. So I think.
Cavemen were lighting their farts on fire.
Yeah. So anyway, I saw these other apps and how they weren't very well designed or very creative or didn't use very, very good technology. And I thought I could do something a lot better than that. So,
right.
And, you know, I read articles about this company, iFart, and they were making. $10,000 a day.
Really?
At the beginning. I don't know what they're making now, but I mean, like real money.
You're like, I didn't know farts could be so lucrative.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, so we give it a shot and put together a team. And basically the concept is, have you seen the app?
I haven't seen it. Yeah.
With no music on the air.
If it makes sound, you should put it on the microphone.
Well,
oh, next to the mic.
Basically, yeah, sure. I'll go ahead and switch it on here. So the you record your farts. And
oh, I see. You record
it. There's a countdown here.
Uh huh.
2, 1, 5. Then you fart. And then you get your score, and it tells you what kind it was.
Olympic fart.
What did I say?
Olympic fart, you deserve a brown medal for that. Yeah. So that was it. And then there's like a, you know, there's like 20 different fart cards. That's what these are called.
Each of your farts gets a different fart card.
Okay.
And so this one, I got an 85. I got 7.5 for volume, 8.2 for length, and then a 5 on range, 6 on bass, 7 on treble. The humidity was damp, and the smell was unhealthy. So
the humidity was damp. That's so gross.
And the key was a D sharp. So, and actually, it's really...
Very accurate.
Really?
Actually, it's not a joke. We're using FMOD sound technology to measure. So, uh-huh. Okay, smell and humidity aren't real, but the rest of these are actually are real. So this right. That really was a D sharp. And you can replay it. And then here's the cool part is you can save it to your library. Mm-hmm. So like I you know, I'll name this Kara.
No.
Kara's fart.
And then here it is.
Name it Sam.
And then I can hit attack and I can attack my friends with it. So you know, I'll attack Gabe here. So and then it just sent the attack.
So now I have a fart waiting for me.
Yeah.
Really?
And then I can go over here and I can look and see, okay, it's my move on this one, it's his move on that one,
mm-hmm.
And then you can see the ones that were completed, it compares the two scores, so...
Really?
You know, I got an 8, in this one I got a 73 versus their 43.
Uh-huh. I mean, as much as I'm gonna love this and laugh, because farts are freaking hysterical, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, is this just like a huge decline in our society? That we've got? I mean, let's be honest, I've got you on the show, I'm pretty gay, I freaking think farts are hysterical, but let's be honest. We're now going to have thousands and hundreds of thousands of millions of people are going to download your app.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to sit and be like, I just totally had a real nasty fat one and just sent it to you. You have people like in their office, they're like sending farts. It's like almost, it's going to become big. Everyone's going to do it. You're going to look at a society that's spending a lot of time recording farts and sending it. You know what I mean? What do you think?
I mean,
did this cross your mind at all, or?
I mean, I personally think this is the highest concept fart game ever made. It's got really, I mean, on a very serious level. I mean, it's got really amazing artwork, and you know, you get to actually not only battle your friends, but you can trick them with our fart rolling feature.
Mm-hmm. So, are you familiar with Rick rolling, which is like there was like this sort of internet craze going around? I don't know, a few months ago where. You send somebody a link via email and you say, hey, check out this, you know, super cool video. And then they click the link and it's Rick Astley singing Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh,
you know,
really?
His video.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so we came up with this thing called fart rolling where you basically, you can go here and then you grab one of the farts that you saved and you can pick a subject line like, hey, watch these two mullets, in a fist fight in their backyard. And then you click it and it sends out an email, and it tricks your friend.
Yeah. So essentially, you got to hold this phone next to your ass and fart. I mean, that's
what it boils down to. Some people use their mouths, but we consider those people to be cheaters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you need to, like, get some good Lysol going on that, because you know what they say about farts, too?
Yeah.
There's so nasty, the Snapple fact, my friend read this to me, that the farts, if you smell it, like, it actually has... 0.something% grams.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually eating it because there's actually there's material.
Particles.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you're actually like you when you smell it, you've actually eaten somebody's fart or your own fart.
Really?
And so my point is that if you're really working overtime on that fart battle, you probably need to really disinfect your phone.
Yeah,
that was so nasty.
We're thinking that we'll have an accessory market with, you know, for covers, special fart battles covers.
Right.
And things like that.
Yeah, you need something to block.
But to your point about the lowest common denominator, yes, this is, I think, a conversation point in the app store is like, you know, are only the lowest types of apps making it to the top of the app store? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think what we've done here is we've taken something that's timeless, you know, it's timeless. Fart jokes
timeless.
Are timeless. And try to take it up a notch.
It's
and
the
make
international
it,
language.
You know, make it
there you go.
Better designed, funnier, better technology, all those kinds of things. And really, this is a launching point for our company, Pop Killer Games. So this is really like our lottery ticket to launch our company. And we have
other... And you guys
other,
have bigger visions.
We have other apps in the works that are not fart-related. They're actually, you know, like we have a trivia app that's really cool.
Well, I mean, you guys are you guys are going to do great, and I'm not against it or anything. I mean, you said you said international language. I mean, I saw YouTube. This isn't farting, but it's pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like where this monkey... Freaking, have you guys seen this? It's like gorilla in a tree sticks his finger up his ass. He pops it out and he smells it, and then he just goes and he just falls off the tree. Yeah. He like takes a big whoop and he's like, oh, like he's in heaven, and he just falls off the tree. He's like, I'm in heaven, and he falls off a damn tree. And I mean, it's not farting, but it's still kind of like that primal kind of like
area.
It's just kind of like, ooh.
I wish gorillas had iPhones.
Oh my gosh, great market. I think that
big
they
market.
Would. I think that you guys would make a killing. So that's cool. So tell us about Pop Killer. So Pop Killer is the parent company.
Right. It's the company that we're launching. And, you know, the mission of the company is really... So Pop stands for pop culture, and Killer is for, you know, killer applications.
Yeah.
Not necessarily iPhone applications, but like one of the next ones that we have is an iPad application. And we're working on a Facebook application. And the idea really is, you know... These are games on your iPhone. When you think of them, the mm-hmm. apps that you download, they're games. But really, this isn't really a game. I mean, it's just entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, it's a novelty, and it's entertainment. And so we think that that's really interesting, how the lines are kind of blurring between games and entertainment. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, if you think about it, like, how many video games have you played that were actually really funny, you know?
Yeah.
There's not
yeah.
that many video games that have great writing and are as funny as, like, say, a TV show or,
mm-hmm, yeah.
you know, a movie or whatever. So, really, we think that there's a huge opportunity for us to, you know, apply comedy skills and you know...
And good writing.
Good writing and entertainment to video games and apps.
Yeah.
Well,
now, you guys must have invested a lot of money in this. I know these things are not cheap.
Yeah. It's it's been, you know, a lot of... I think I'm developing an ulcer.
yeah.
No, but actually, it's really nice that, you know, we're finally starting to see, you know, the downloads are coming in, and we're going into the black now instead of the red. So it's a good feeling to finally have achieved that goal after, like I said, 6 months of work to do this.
Yeah.
So it wasn't.
Can you guys explain? Because I know you've talked a little bit about the app application process and how it's pretty intense. What is that like? I mean, it's not just...
Well, ask them. Don't ask me.
I
just know it's very... It's complicated. I mean, it's expensive. And
just like anything else, though, I think that quality... I mean, yeah, quality costs.
Yeah.
And we think this is a quality app, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think... That's the reason why you...
I mean, it's very intricate. It's not like, you know, I mean, it's not just one or two screens. I mean, you're showing me a lot of stuff happening here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the reason why there's so much garbage in the app stores, because it takes a tremendous amount of effort. A lot... We probably had 7 people working on this, you know, so I had a technologist, a designer who's an amazing illustrator, writers. We have a PR person that's just kicking off a PR campaign today. Literally, this is the first thing that we've done
to
announce the app. And, you know, developer, there's me project managing. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And like you said, there's expenses, there's servers, there's, you know, infrastructure,
right.
there's all kinds of, you know, submitting it to the App Store. And there's the whole, like, sort of, we were really, you know, biting our fingernails saying, like, we could get rejected, you know,
yes.
after all this
after
work.
All that,
and
yeah.
I've heard horror stories about these companies that submit their apps and they don't hear back from Apple for months, or they finally hear back after months and they say, sorry, just, you know,
how long you spent all this time, you get through 6 months and then you submit, like, did you hear something right away? How long was it?
No, I mean, they say the average is like 3 to 5 days, and it took us about a week because we did it over the Memorial Day holiday.
Mm.
So we were starting to get nervous, like, uh-oh. And we heard, like, because we can sort of see who's playing with the app on the back end. So we heard, like, you know, some tester lady at Apple, like, test. And we were like, oh,
we got nervous.
She just sounds like she has no sense of humor. we're
oh,
finished.
Okay.
But everything
in other words,
out,
she didn't
so.
Rip a fart.
No. Oh, yeah. She didn't rip one. She cut one.
No.
So just tell us, we've got to wrap up because we got a couple more guests. But so people can get it at the iTunes store now, the App Store, whatever they call
it. Yeah, so if you go to iTunes, you search for Fart Battles. Or if you just go to fartbattles.com, we have actually a pretty funny demo video. You can hear Gabe's the narrator for that.
I love it.
Fartbattles.com, the demo video.
Now, you also guys have a promotion, right, which you sent me the promotion code?
Well, how much is the app if someone goes to get it?
99 cents.
99
right
cents?
Now.
That's nothing.
We may actually, you know, I don't know, we're toying with pricing models, so we'll see kind of what happens. And if people like that price
point.
Yeah,
if people buy it, yeah, you can raise it a little bit. No big deal.
Or we could drop it to free and then we could do an upgrade model.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. There's a lot of different ways. Well, Gabe and Tucker, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.
This is impressive. I mean, you know, I don't know that I would have gotten into something like that. And it takes a lot of
really
faith.
My parents are really proud.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
My parents don't know about it.
But well, not just the subject
when you
matter.
When you take them on a trip to Fiji or Tahiti.
Yeah, I'm
take them there,
and
then you'd be like, "Yeah, farts pay your farts are paying your cabana right now."
I'm gonna
now.
Get a fart-powered Learjet.
Yeah, I think you should.
Okay, so everybody,
thank
go to the App Store, get Fart Battles, and Gabe and Tucker, we got to meet you in person, so good thing you're not demonstrating your farts, because that's one thing we would not allow here.
We were gonna stop off at the Taco Bell. Ventura.
Yeah, you could have packed. Some heat going and brewed a couple.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with our new guests right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Get back to Sam and Karen in the morning on LA Talk Radio.
These guys guys were fun, huh?
They were fun, man. They're fun and grateful. You guys go check them out.
Fart battles.
I mean, if you got the time to kill.
Obviously, you need a lot of time for that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Okay, well, we have our guests in the studio. We have two more guests. And we have Cynthia Clark, right?
Yes.
And your daughter, Cassara. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a cool name.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Unusual, huh?
Yeah, thank you.
And,
old French.
So you were telling me you just moved from San Francisco, right?
Yes.
How long did you live there?
7 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And before you were here, you said?
Yes.
I see. Are you originally from L.A.?
No, from New Orleans.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. No. Orleans. I'm from Houston, so we're kind of neighbors.
Yes, exactly.
Kind
Deep
of.
South. Deep South girl. A lot of people from New Orleans went after Katrina in Houston.
Yes.
Oh,
it's
really?
A whole different show, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole different. Because I haven't lived there for a long time. So anyway, back to you.
So why did you move from New Orleans to L.A.?
Well, I moved from New Orleans to Chicago.
Oh, I see. So you moved around a lot.
Yes. I'm a gypsy.
Yeah.
And then from Chicago to L.A.
I see. Okay.
And then L.A. to San Francisco and then back to L.A.
Sounds good.
There you go. Just jump around the world. See it.
Yeah.
Hey.
Now, we met on Facebook briefly, and I looked over your profile, and it sounded very interesting. You're into a lot of different things.
Yes.
Right? Now, you're a psychopathologist.
Yes.
Now, tell us what that means. I mean, I don't know what it means, but it sounded fascinating.
It sounds intense.
Yeah.
It is intense. A forensic psychopathologist.
Oh, forensic.
Yes.
Okay.
So I work with dissecting cases such as serial killers, mass murder, sometimes on a smaller scale. I'll even help people in traffic court.
Really?
So it's taking something and dissecting it and putting the puzzle pieces together.
Right. Now, how did you get into that? I mean, you have to go to school for this kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what do you major in to get into something like that?
Well, you could major in criminology, but mm-hmm. I majored in psychology.
So I see. Okay.
I have a BS, which many people say, yes, you do.
yeah, there you go.
A master's, and I have a PsyD, which is a doctorate of psychology, clinical psychology, mm-hmm. and I have a PhD.
Wow, you've been spending
basically
a lot of time.
Basically, what
in
we're
school.
Saying is this lady knows
so
her
dumb.
Stuff. She knows her stuff. She's got us figured out. She knows stuff. Back to you.
Yeah. So you work with the law enforcement agencies, right?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Or I can work with the person accused.
I see. Okay.
It just depends.
Right. So what do you do? I mean, they bring a case to you. What? I mean, like a murder or something. What would you do? I mean, do you go to the scene with them? Do you have to be part of the investigation?
Well, it depends. I prefer to go to the scene because mm-hmm. the more clues you can get, the better I can determine who did the crime or if the person really did the crime. It's such a puzzle. Like you
right.
need evidence.
Right.
But you can't always go to the scene.
Mm.
You know, it depends. I had a case in Atlanta. I couldn't just get up and go to Atlanta. So they sent me the files and they sent me the photos.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look and figure it out and see, you know, what is what and make a determination based on certain things. Sometimes I get to do phone interviews. Sometimes I can't. So sometimes you're limited.
Yeah. So I would imagine you put some people behind bars, right?
I put people behind bars and I've set people free.
Okay. All
That's
right.
That's a good combo. That's
yeah.
a good, on both sides of the fence. You're just kind of really there to bring out the nuts and bolts and the puzzle pieces. I love that.
Yes.
Watching shows like CSI 24 or all these kind of forensic type psychology type shows or even Dexter, which is
I love Dexter.
I was going to ask if you love Dexter. I mean, have you watched Dexter, Sam?
No.
Do you
never
know about the premise
that.
At all?
Yeah, what is he, like a murderer or something?
Well, he's got the serial killer instincts from his childhood, and his dad's a cop, and his adopted father's a cop, and he
mm-hmm.
teaches him how to redirect those urges towards the bad people.
Mm.
So as an adult, he's a detective, right? Or no, I'm sorry, what is he?
He's a forensic let's see. What
blood spatterist.
He's a specialist.
No, she's like, blood spatterist.
Yeah.
She's like, what? How old are you?
I'm 20.
Oh, my gosh. She looks like it. She's like, blood spatterist. Because she's watching it. She knows all about it.
Oh, she does. She loves
but
it,
But basically,
too.
He, you know, kind of does something similar to what you do. I mean, I'm curious, all these different shows and that trend towards this subject, do you find it to be accurate or is it, I mean, because you're really doing it.
Yeah. No, for the most part, it's not accurate. Criminal Minds is 82% accurate.
Okay.
I mean, every now and then, I just want to jump in the TV and wring their necks because they, with a sentence,
mm-hmm.
a few sentences, they could be accurate. And okay. I don't understand why they don't do that.
You should offer your services to them.
I have.
Okay.
On qualifications. I've worked for some television shows to help make them more accurate. Sometimes they listen. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. So tell us about some of the cases that you've taken on. I mean, as far as, like, bring us into, like, life in the day of you and doing your thing. Because, I mean, I have so many questions because it's so it's fascinating.
Well, it depends. There was the case in Atlanta, which I thought was a case of injustice. So I actually went to them.
Mm.
And I do a lot of pro bono work because I just feel if I can help, I should.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
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 Go on.
I also, you know, beg on the street for food.
Yeah, there you go.
But so in this particular case, I went to them and said, do you need a forensic psychologist? Because I knew they couldn't afford one.
Yeah.
Right.
And I knew they didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
And so his lawyer said, are you kidding? Sure. So I get the file and I look it over. And then I write up a report based on why he didn't do the crime. That's one case. I have two Atlanta cases. In the other case, why his sentence was overbearing and he should now be set free.
Mm.
So after several of these reports and back and forth with the judge, I was part of the team who did help him be set free.
Mm. What moved you to want to, I mean, can you talk about the case at all or personalize it so we understand a little bit more? Or
I guess I can talk about it. I mean, some of them you really can't. You're not supposed
okay, well,
to.
Okay, well, you know, just give us examples, I guess.
In this particular case, he was accused of a crime 30 years ago. And the crime, according to everything, was really not, I mean, maybe it was a little crime.
Uh-huh.
And that's even maybe stretching it. But he was black and she was white.
Okay.
And so her father said he raped her, and it was they were together and they loved each other, and so because the father had power, he put him in jail for rape.
Really?
And the daughter has said even all these years, no, it was always consensual. So even if it wasn't consensual, at the very least it would have been statutory rape, which there would have been 1 year.
Right.
30 years later, he's still serving time.
And he was put away 30 years ago? Really? Mm-hmm.
Well, now not 30 years ago, because he got out like 3 years ago.
Oh,
but
wow. How did you even find out about this case?
Was it had hit the news, and that they were trying to no avail. Nothing was working. They couldn't get him free. They were saying, you know, you're stuck with your sentence. A judge hands it down. Too bad, so sad. And I thought, you know, this is wrong. There has to be a way to fix this.
Mm.
Yeah.
So how did you help in that? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to understand is what you do, because I'm thinking like blood splatterist. I'm thinking of like, you know, the weapons here. This is actually you took a case with photos or whatever. And how did you come up with this?
This case is a little different because it's a different type of crime versus murder or serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did then is talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get to talk to the girl because she was a little inundated with everybody trying to interview her, and she didn't want to interview anybody. So even though she was on the side of letting him go, I couldn't talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
So after looking at the police files and the records and everything, I take everything together, and then I write a report as to why he was wronged, why all these pieces were done and put together to deliberately hurt him.
Wow.
And why he's not a bad person. And then I look at his prison record and I say he's never done anything in prison that even shows any indication that he's a bad guy. So why would you continue to make him stay in prison for a crime that at worst would have been a year sentence for anybody else 30 years ago?
Wow.
That's it. That's so amazing.
Yeah. So you actually get to build a case against them, right?
Well, help build a case. In mine, I do compile a report.
Right.
I had a case, maybe a better case for you, where I wasn't able to get to it again. So they sent me the pictures, and they were blood splatter pictures. Good ones. Okay.
There we go. Dirty, gritty. I love it. No,
yeah. they were good murder pictures.
You must see some grisly images.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Does it get normal? I mean, you're looking at like a severed foot. Like,
you have to look at it as this was one guy I interviewed for quite a bit was Lawrence Bittaker, and he and Roy Norris killed at least 5 girls, probably back in the 80s. My memory at the moment isn't the greatest. Might have been the late 70s.
So he's a serial killer. Was he big in the time? Because I don't
remember. Yes, very big.
Did you remember him, Sam?
No.
Okay. So go ahead. He's been on death row now for at least, I believe, 18 years. Mm. So he would drive around, a career criminal. He got out of prison after robbery, got a van, outfitted it, and then when Roy Norris and him got together, they would pick up girls in Redondo Beach, and then they would get them high, and then they would bring them out to some remote place, mm-hmm. and they would rape, and then violently kill them.
Mm.
Very, very violently. Well, I got lucky enough in my early days of doing this to get to interview the judge, the lawyers, and Bittaker. And I got the tapes. He audiotaped the crimes. Now, he didn't videotape them. He could have, but he instead audiotaped them. So I was writing a book about Bittaker. And wanting to listen to the tapes, I couldn't for the longest time.
Mm.
And then finally, I had to say, this is no different than Friday the 13th.
Mm.
Because these were real human beings that he tortured and killed in very heinous ways. Mm. So when I do it now, I have to do it as if it's
detached a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's okay.
You have to put a petition up.
Oh,
you
man. In order to do your job, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, you're human and you don't want to be calloused, but at the same time, you have to get through it. Yeah. My goodness. So what, I mean, the mind of serial killers has always been, I think, a fascinating subject. And I know some friends that are a little creepier than others that are into it. Like, I had a friend that she used to back in high school. I hope she's doing good. She used to research serial killers, and she'd have, like, her favorite one. And just, I don't know. I mean, that's a little creepy. But not that she thought it was good, but that there's a fascination. Cause
huge.
Their brain works totally different. Mm-hmm. What would you say about the minds or the different types of minds out there as far as, I mean, I'm sure some of it's environmental, some of it's got to be biological. What do you think?
Well, there are many things. I mean, for example, the we used to call him the Texas Candy Killer. He goes by some other names, but way back, oh gosh, dates are just going to fail me now. But many, many years ago, there was a man who climbed the Texas Austin Tower in the campus of Texas, I believe, A&M. Texas University, and he took a rifle and he just started killing people. I think he killed over 30 people.
Mm.
Now, he was a mass murderer, but before he did that, he wrote a letter and he said, please, please dissect me. I know there's something wrong with me.
Mm.
And he begged them, and sure enough, he had a brain tumor that was on the area of the brain that affects behavior and will create violent behavior. And he had gone into, he had been a student. He had gone into the campus clinic several times with very, very bad headaches and asked them to please help him. And they didn't. Now, had they, kind of like the Virginia Tech case, you know, maybe that wouldn't have happened. But of course, this was 30-something years ago. Mm. We hadn't learned as much. In fact, that case is how we got the SWAT teams. At the same time, in Los Angeles, there was another case going on, and he was up in this tower, and they were trying to figure out, how do we get him? What do we do? And Austin had this elite group of police officers. They didn't have a name, but they were sharpshooters, snipers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, maybe if we helicopter around him and drop near him, we can just take him out.
Right.
In the meantime, there was somebody who had worked in the tower who was ex-military, and another cop who was off duty coming up, not knowing this is going on, to come up this way through the barricade. And so they did this, and they did this point thing, and they just came in, and he shot at them, and they shot, and like 60, 70 bullets later, he was dead. But when they did this, they thought, this is great. This is a way to get these people.
Mm.
And at the same time, something was going on in L.A. similarly, and so they talked to each other and said, we should make groups like this that specialize in these cases and bring them out when we need them. Hence, SWAT. I believe it was 1969. SWAT was created.
Really? That's pretty interesting. Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, so it's rather a newer thing to have SWAT teams and stuff.
Yeah, the specialization. I mean, the capability and snipers on the police force were there.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't have them as the specialized teams until these incidences.
Yeah.
So when you've interviewed this dude you got to interview, what's his name,
Bittaker?
Bittaker, mm-hmm. Okay. How did that go? I mean, what was that? I mean, she just rolled her eyes. I want to hear about this.
Oh, okay, serial killers, when I was interviewing them to begin with to do my thesis way back when, they have a pattern. They start off really sweet because for some reason, even though you tell them you're interviewing them to learn about them, mm-hmm. and that you're not going to help them because they did it. I mean, one of them, there's video evidence of him doing it.
Mm. Yeah.
Hello. So you're not promising anything. You're not going to testify at their hearings, you know, or go to the governor and ask for a reprieve. I'm up front. But they think they're going to con you. Many of them are sociopaths. They're all psychopaths.
Can you clarify the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath?
Okay. A sociopath doesn't have to be a psychopath. A sociopath is a very easy way to think about it is quintessentially your con man. They're very charming. They come in and they're able to woo you, but they have no internal feelings. Like, when they started the Dexter character, they created him as a sociopath. He's really a psychopath. Mm. But they made him where he doesn't feel. That part's true. However, as we developed him, we see he does have feelings. He cares about his sister. He did care about his wife. He cared about his dad. Sociopaths don't have that. Mm. They use people. They fake it.
I see.
I've heard it said that sociopaths, and correct me if I'm wrong, they lack remorse and
yes,
empathy.
Correct.
So they don't identify and they don't feel bad about
that's
what they've
right.
done. And that you can have sociopaths in business, you can have mm-hmm. them in everyday life,
right.
but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're predators.
Right, right. And they
okay.
they may never kill. They're just, they can be bad in the sense that they will go after your job in a heartbeat mm-hmm. and not think twice about the fact that you have six kids to feed and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
they can, they're just...
Ruthless, like
yeah,
just okay.
very ruthless. Whereas psychopaths have something wrong going on, and eventually, probably, will go over the edge if there's a trigger. If there's no trigger in their life, and a trigger is some sort of stressor that will make them go over the edge.
Mm.
It could be the death of a parent, death of a loved one. They can feel love. A psychopath can love, can have a family. BTK, family. Definitely loved his family,
mm-hmm.
loves his family.
Mm.
But, you know, I think the stressor that made him begin to kill was his family to begin with.
Mm.
And then when his wife got pregnant, he stopped killing. And then when his daughter was pregnant, that's when the messages started again to the media about BTK. I think he wanted to be caught.
Really?
Mm.
And that's my well, take on that.
Yeah.
So his stressor, I think, was pregnancy.
Mm.
And
so you're saying that psychopaths have something in them, whether it's, are we saying it's biological or are we saying it's, we don't know.
We don't know yet.
We don't know.
Yeah, that's
but
what we're
just saying there's something that is going on in them, that there's some kind of trauma or life circumstance that pushes them over the edge.
Right.
That sounds so vague, though. It sounds like that could be a lot of people, right? Maybe not everybody goes, you know, kills people, but I mean that when everybody that is a serial killer or a murderer or whatever, are they're all psychopaths then?
No. Well, serial killers, I would say probably, yes, they're all psychopaths. I don't know of any that isn't.
Mm.
Do you?
Okay.
Yeah. You're asking Cassandra, like, are you into this stuff
she's
too?
She's studying it.
Really?
Too.
So you're going to follow in mom's path pretty much?
I mean, I don't have the stomach for it.
No, huh?
No.
I know.
I mean, I think there's a part of it. Obviously, I'm fascinated by the brain and how it works. But I mean, as soon as you talked about that tape and how you couldn't listen to it, I was like,
yeah.
I mean, even my brain, I was like, whoa. I can't do it. I can't do it.
It gets hard. Well, a long time ago, I was a paramedic in Chicago.
Mm.
And some of the things you see, and of course, I was amongst the first females. There were only three, I think three in the whole country.
Wow.
And I was number four. So the jokes they played on you, the body parts that they left for you.
Really?
You would go, okay, fine. You had to toughen up or you were going to be out.
Yeah, somebody has to do that work, you know, and obviously you can't connect with it. You can't be personal with it.
Right, you have to let that go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's hard. I mean, that's very hard.
Sounds like doing stand-up.
Yeah, I don't think any decent human being can actually stand to look at these things, you know, or listen to these things.
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah, it's hard.
So you interviewed the dude, what's his name again?
Bittaker.
And Bittaker was trying to butter you up, right?
Yes, okay. So there's a pattern I found with the serial killers, is that about the first 1 to 5 interviews, they are just as sweet and nice as can be. They don't talk about the case. Mm-hmm. They talk about their life. They try to get to know you, which, of course, you tell them nothing. Mm-hmm. And they try...
You do that because they can use it as leverage, or...?
Yes. They're very clever. Mm-hmm. Very, very smart. They're street smart. They can equal me just by who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so the games that are played...
Manipulation and yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you have to be really
You don't tell careful. Them anything about your life.
No, but they can, you know, they're smart. They can figure out certain things. You know, they can say, oh, you're divorced, you're this, you're that, and you just try to give them nothing because anything at all. Plus, they have friends. There's a network out there, and they tell each other. I had serial killers come to me. Now I still get emails once in a while from this one. And he keeps changing his email address, but duh, I know who it is. And he keeps saying, you know, I need you to testify on my behalf. No, you. This video evidence, you did it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to testify for you.
Yeah.
I'll testify against you.
Right.
That's funny. You're going down.
Leave me alone.
Wow. So you're saying that serial killers know each other?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that they were very isolated and private.
No, not these days, because there's a network of each other where they share news, whether they're behind bars or in front of bars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they like to communicate with each other. And now with the internet, it's so easy. You know, they get private rooms and private things and you know, each other, they really scan each other so that cops can't get in.
Yeah.
And then they chat about things.
Right. Now, I mean, do you ever think about what if... when someone gets out, they're going to come after you?
Yes, I thought about that, but the people that I've interviewed are all on death row.
Mm.
So, you know, one would hope
that
they're not getting out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the ones that they've gotten to know, they're locked.
I'm like thinking of Cape Fear now, you know. It's
it's an intense.
Don't escape. Yeah.
It's an intense thing. So you're saying they've tried to butter you up the first five.
Yeah, the first 5 to 6. And then when you don't show any kind of, "Oh, wow, you're a sweet guy," they get nasty and violent and vile. And then the next, however many interviews, become the true colors. It's really, I think, fascinating because they start really getting angry and you see what is underneath that, you know, fake exterior. I just thought that part was incredibly, and almost all of them, the same exact number. Before you see the true person.
Really?
Like 5 interviews, 7 interviews?
5 to 6, yeah.
5 to 6 interviews. And then you start seeing them kind of like throw a fit.
Yeah, if they can't win you over in that, then they become aggressive and verbally violent because they can't be physically violent.
Right.
So it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Now, so, I mean, you know, obviously there's these things, there's these concerns about this. What made you decide to get into this? I mean, it's a bit risky.
Yeah, well, what happened was many, many years ago, I was an actress. I still am an actress. And I was on a series called Stat, which was Danny Arnold's last series. Wonderful, incredible writer, director. And I was also on Days of Our Lives at the same time. And somebody started calling me and harassing me, and it was scary. Yeah. He would take pictures of me, so I knew he was around me, and then he would cut out body parts and leave them on my front door. So I went to the police, and I said, help me. And they said, oh, no, honey, it's just like a obscene phone caller. And I said, no, he's doing really violent things. Mm-hmm. Now, I was already doing my doctorate. I was doing my doctorate in post-traumatic stress Vietnam vets. And that's where I was going to work. That was my inclination, because... For me, I love acting, but I wanted to do something, you know, when you're not acting.
Yeah.
So that's what I was going to do. I was 3 weeks away from getting my degree. And they said, no, everything's cool. He's going to go away. But I knew he wasn't going to go away. So I started calling publications. At this time, we didn't have the term stalker. We didn't know them. We knew people followed people. We knew that, but we didn't know anything about them. We didn't know they could be dangerous or violent yet. We were just learning it.
Right.
And Rebecca Schaefer, after this began, Rebecca Schaefer was shot.
Right.
Mm. Okay, so now everything's beginning to come together, and we see we have this person who went through all of these machinations to get her address, and then he shoots her.
Mm.
Okay, so now, you know, could this person who's coming after me be really violent? I think so. So I start calling publications, and I ask, do you have anything on this, these people, these stalkers? And they said, stalkers? What's a stalker?
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, people who stalk, they prey on people. And they go, no, we don't. And then finally I hit one publication who said, no, we don't, a psychological publication, but if you change your doctorate to stalking, we'll publish you.
Really?
And I said, will you put that in writing? And they said, yes. And I said, okay. So I changed my doctorate with 3 weeks to go.
Wow.
And I then said, okay, now how can I prove that these stalkers are dangerous? So I thought, okay, I've got to set up a hypothesis. She's learning all about that right now. So my hypothesis was, who would be most likely to stalk their victims? Serial killers. So then I said, well, how do I prove that? Well, I have to interview serial killers and see, did they stalk? Well, I did 77 interviews, and every single one of them stalked.
Really?
So armed with all of that, I went back to the police station, I threw it on their desk, and I said, these guys are dangerous. Every single one of them stalked their victims first, did things like my guy is doing. I want police protection.
Did you, have you ever seen a stalker that has never taken it to?
Yes.
Okay. So so we're saying that people can be stalkers and not serial killers, but serial killers are always stalkers first.
Pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, there is a serial killer who just picks a victim randomly, sure. But there are serial killers who want specific victims.
Right.
They want redheads. And then they watch a redhead until they feel that they can grab her safely and get it. There are other serial killers who just want to get rid of bums or prostitutes. That's really common. They think that it cleanses the earth. Which is a common, that's a psychosis.
Yeah.
I heard of a study, tell me if this is accurate, but that they put a surveillance camera in front of a mall. They had a bunch of different serial killers and rapists watch people come in and out. And they took, you know, basically surveys of who they would go after. And what they found was a lot of the women were a combination of holding things in their hands, looking down when they walked, appeared to not have as much confidence. And kind of homely looking, not unattractive, but more of a plain kind of look.
That's interesting.
A plain kind of look, like almost not ugly or anything, just more of a. And what they gathered was it looked like these were women that wouldn't be put up as much of a fight.
Right. They want the least amount of fight.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So they don't. So they don't enjoy the resistance, you mean?
Oh,
or
no.
Maybe sometimes they do.
That's
no, I
different.
Think they, do.
They do, but when they take you, they want to take you easy.
I
then
see.
They don't,
okay.
The battle later
I see.
Is their fun part, whatever that may be. But if you're coming out of a mall and you fight them, people are going to start running.
Right.
And in today's climate, a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to take it. And they'll just beat the crap out of the person doing it. So they don't want that. They want somebody who's not paying attention, who somebody less attractive is going to be more likely to be wooed by a man who's so-so, especially if he's a sociopath, psychopath, who's going to go up and say, oh, you dropped this, or can I help you with your bags, or something, and she's going to go, oh, wow, this nice guy is helping me. And then she's more likely to allow him to get closer to him.
Right.
And so, yes, they pick certain people because they're easier. Many, many, many years ago in Chicago, I was coming home, and this car came up to me, and they were yelling and screaming, and they opened the car door, and I went, oh, okay. This is it. I'm on the street alone. It is daytime, but this is not good. I'm going to wind up in this car and God only knows what. So I remembered a lot of what my teacher said, and they said that, you know, you have to use your own wits when you're in a situation that could be dangerous. And one of the things, they don't like people who are loud, and they don't like people who are crazy. So I turned around and whooshed this way, mm-hmm. my head up high, and I went, this is July. I went, Merry Christmas! and the guy backed off, and then I started singing Jingle Bells.
Uh-huh. You've got to do, my friend did that, because I live in Hollywood. She said she was being walked, these guys were walking behind her in the middle of Hollywood, the dark, and anyway, she takes out a cell phone and starts screaming in the cell phone like she's chewing mm-hmm. somebody out, like she's a little nuts. I also had another friend who just got broken up by her boyfriend. She was a little crazy anyway. And she was, you know, that pissed, kind of like hurt feeling. So she's walking. She's got her fishnets on. She's got her high heels in her hand. She's leaving the club. She's gotten a fight with her boyfriend. This guy comes up to her to try to mug her. She's like, not today, mother. So she takes her high heels. She's like, get the f*** off me! And he's like, go away from me, you crazy bitch. And he just runs. And she just went. She took a high heel to the forehead. And she went crazy. I think, and they say, you know what? If you crap or can pick your nose or fart on command or pee, like, it turns them off.
Exactly.
Start flinging shit at them, you know, yeah. if you can.
Or if they see you playing fart battles yeah. on the iPhone. All right, Cynthia, thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh, that thank was so you. Interesting.
Do you want people to find you anywhere on the Internet? Or?
Well, my website is CynthiaLeahClark.com.
Mm-hmm. And wonderful. So you provide services for people, too? Mm-hmm. Or
yes.
Sounds good. Okay. Okay, Sarah, the best luck to you.
Thank you.
I know you can't stand the images and stuff, but I know you'll get used to it. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're very interesting, a lot of fun. And good luck with the move.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Kira, thank you so much. And are you still okay? Yeah, you seem like you're doing fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's just talking about serial killers.
Yeah, no, it
I need to go and take a break now.
Yeah, no, it freaks you out a bit.
It does. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio Studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.